6 months after the abrupt and violence-laced departure of constitutionally elected President Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide, and over 3 months after the deployment of UN peacekeeping units, which were hailed as an instrument for order and stability in this long-troubled Caribbean island, Haiti remains poised on the edge of chaos.
Just as nature in the form of a tropical storm that has managed to kill perhaps 1,000 Haitians, thousands more have died over the past decade, victims of a right-wing military and paramilitary force.
Today, ruled by an ineffectual and illegitimate cabal whose only validity is supplied by U.S. fiat, Haiti now faces the imminent de facto reconstitution of its brutal Haitian armed forces dissolved by Aristide in 1995.
Across the island, bands of former soldiers are seizing police stations and establishing themselves as the de facto local power, at times displacing the remnants of the national police and placing large swaths of the country under what is effectively outlaw rebel jurisdiction. Meanwhile, those soldiers demand the restitution of unpaid wages over the past 10 years.
These soldiers of ill fortune have met little, if any, resistance from the rump Washington-imposed interim government of Washington-designated Prime Minister Gerard Latortu, and at times they have received open encouragement from Latortu's cabinet members, most notably Interior Minister and former General Erard Abraham, and the island's sinister Justice Minister Bernard Gousse.
Both of them have suggested that former soldiers, some of the most prominent among whom have already been convicted in absentia for human rights violations committed during the military government of 1991 to 1994, could simply be integrated into the police force.
In the face of these developments, the leaders of the Haitian armed forces are gathering strength in a bid to retake political power and restore the repression for which the army could always be counted to provide throughout most of Haiti's turbulent 20th century history. The UN Stabilization Force and the international community alike have remained almost deafeningly silent.
At the present time, the UN presence in Haiti is more myth than fact, while a handful of renegades with a military background in conjunction with the opposition group of 184 have the clearest access to the Latorre regime and its ability to impact on the daily lives of the population.
Within Haiti, international troops drawn principally from the rogue armed forces of Brazil, Argentina, and Chile, which are better known for the repression of their own citizens during previous eras of military rule than for their nation-building skills, are seemingly paralyzed by inaction.
These UN forces have made only the paltriest of efforts to preserve order in the face of paramilitary power grabs by ex-Haitian armed forces figures like Louis-Joël Chamblain and Guy Philippe. They have been better at stalking pro-Aristide Lavalas party's political forces than armed renegade former soldiers.
In Washington, a State Department preoccupied by Iraq and North Korea appears to have all but overlooked the island's existence. And in New York, a craven lack of political will is in evidence, accompanied by the kind of Machiavellian plotting by the U.S. and French Security Council delegations that was witnessed when that body refused to provide an international police force to defend Aristide earlier this year.
Nor is UN Secretary General Kofi Annan any more sensitive to the plight of the Haitian populace than he was just before Aristide's downfall, when he provided cover for the U.S. insistence that the former president deserved to be forced into exile because he was a failed leader.
There is yet to be any kind of clear acknowledgement of the magnitude of the threat that Haiti's already battered democratic institutions face from the military resurgence on the island, much less the strategy which will be used to disarm these illegal militias, as well as clearly establish the authority of a trained, professional police force, and bring to justice those former soldiers accused of human rights abuses who are now making outrageous demands for compensation. Quite to the contrary, as the exoneration of mass murderer Louis Chamblain by Justice Minister Gousse and the island's tainted courts graphically exemplify, Haiti is still a very sick country.
Thus, as the clock continues to tick on a peacekeeping mission originally authorized for only 6 months, it seems increasingly likely that the United Nations will exit Haiti much as the U.S. and Canada precipitously did in 1996, leaving behind a profoundly unstable political situation dominated by heavily armed factions, as thousands of weapons remain in the possession of right-wing vigilantes as well as some in the hands of pro-Aristide supporters.
The situation is made even more volatile today by the former military leadership's aspirations to restore both the army and live in the same reign of terror it applied during the decades-long Duvalier and post-Duvalier military dictatorships, as well as under the brutal 1991 to 1994 military junta of the cunning general Raúl Cedras.
Among the most alarming signs of military resurgence within the last 60 days was the acquittal on August 17th in a show trial of former army captain and paramilitary leader Louis-Joël Chamblon, previously convicted in absentia for the 1993 murder of prominent Aristide supporter Antoine Ismery.
This outrageous verdict, achieved under the aegis of Le Tortue's disreputable justice minister, Bernard Gousse, was reached after a ludicrously brief overnight trial in which the prosecution called only one witness who proved to be entirely irrelevant to the case.
This earned for the interim government stinging indictments on the editorial pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post, as well as widespread denunciations from human rights organizations and even from the State Department, which bears much of the blame for the current dysfunctional rule of the island.
However, the subsequent rash of self-serving individual power plays on the part of the ex-soldiers and the government's utter unwillingness to confront or even denounce such challenges to state authority has received virtually no attention outside of Haiti.
This development has to be rightfully considered part of the same dangerous phenomenon as the growing power of former military figures like Chamblon, as well as sly ideologues like the smiling Justice Minister Gousse, who was clearly complicit in orchestrating Chamblon's acquittal.
For example, only 6 days after the conclusion of the Chamblon trial, the Haitian Times reported on August 18th that the interim government had appointed Winter Etienne, a leader of the bloody armed uprising in Gonaves that preceded Aristide's exile, who is also the coordinator of the National Reconstruction Front, a party headed by former army officers, including rebel leader Guy Philippe, as director of the National Port Authority in Gonaves, the very city he earlier had helped sack.
At the Ministry of Interior, former ranking military figure Minister Erard Abraham continues to add former high-ranking military cronies to his staff. Among recent arrivals is former Colonel Williams Regala, a particularly sinister aide to former dictator General Henri Namphy, and undoubtedly a principal plotter of the massacre of voters during Haiti's aborted November 29, 1987 election.
Regala joins another former colleague, Colonel Henri Robert Marc Charles, a member of the Cedras-led military junta that overthrew democratically elected President Aristide in 1991, and who is currently the target of a as-yet-unenforced judicial order requiring his imprisonment prior to trial for involvement in a peasant massacre in Piatra in March 1990.
Given these pro-military signals on the part of the Le Tortue government, which consistently has demonstrated its sympathy for former military leaders, at the same time it officially rejects the idea of reconstituting the armed forces on the grounds that such a momentous step should only be taken by the next elected government, it is hardly surprising that bands of former soldiers are making ever more far-fetched bids for power in cities across Haiti.
On August 17th, five officers of the National Police's Riot Squad, CIMO, returned to their Port-au-Prince headquarters, asserting that a group wearing uniforms of the disbanded military had attacked them and seized their weapons and uniforms.
Subsequently, Radio Kiskeya reported that other CIMO officers have accused the government-appointed director of the National Police Administration and former military figure, Destorel Germain, of organizing the attack along with a number of demobilized soldiers seeking reinstatement, an accusation that raises the specter of collaboration between some of the more predatory elements of the police force and bands of ex-soldiers in the latter's fight for legal status.
Former soldiers have already begun to establish their control over a series of small urban areas, particularly in the desperately poor Central Plateau region.
On September 1st, a large force of 150 former soldiers took control of Petite Gove, southwest of the capital, and seized 10 police officers as hostages the following day in neighboring Grand Gove in retaliation for the arrest of four soldiers by police officials. The two sides subsequently agreed to an exchange of prisoners. Also on September 2nd, more than 50 heavily armed ex-soldiers demonstrated in Gonaves, calling for the reconstitution of the army and the restoration of their back pay.
Once there, they were met with open arms by the fiercely anti-Aristide rebel group, the Gonaves Resistance Front, itself largely constituted by former soldiers, which expressed its support for the immediate formation of a legally reorganized and retrained army.
Even more alarming was the response of the official government authorities to the Gonaves March. Rather than denouncing this clear threat to public order on the part of a gang of thugs, as they had been earlier characterized by Secretary of State Colin Powell, departmental delegate Eli Kantov declared that the former soldiers had no aim other than to help the people of that city and negotiated with the establishment of a headquarters in a state school within the city.
Further south in Jacmel, and on the same day, yet another contingent of former soldiers arrived to reinforce with arms and ammunition a group of their colleagues occupying the office of Radio Timoun.
And in perhaps the most symbolically important incident, former soldiers occupied the police station in Beladere on the Dominican border on September 5th and immediately repainted the facility in yellow, the traditional color of FADH barracks.
Simultaneously, the band of ex-soldiers in control of Petite Gouve was swelled by new arrivals, and Coast Guard installations in Le Quai remained under the control of ex-soldiers.
The first evidence of a response on the part of the government and the UN peacekeeping force came on September 7th, when Haitian police, backed by Argentine troops, regained control of Saint-Marc in a day after former soldiers took control of the city, 60 miles north of Port-au-Prince.
In response, rebel leader Sergeant Ramassanthe Ravi declared on behalf of the ex-soldiers, "We'll fight to the last man. We'd rather die in combat instead of dying on our knees."
They, government authorities, came to power thanks to our weapons they now declare illegal. If they think they can deny us our rights, they will know the same fate as Aristide. The fact that we left Saint-Marc does not mean we gave up. We'll teach a lesson to those who want to destroy the military.
Ravi, once implicated in a brutal 2002 massacre committed by former FADH personnel in Belvedere, is now the most visible and rambunctious spokesman for the ex-soldiers' movement, which is on the brink of maintaining de facto control over large swaths of Haiti.
The government's show of force in Saint-Marc on September 7th hardly deterred the ex-soldiers in their attempts to establish themselves as a rival security force.
Also on September 7th in Port-au-Prince, two ex-soldiers, reportedly from Petite Gouve, were shot and killed by riot police near the Prime Minister's office in Mousseau after firing at a police station.
According to Police Commissioner Fritz Gerald Apollon, the two were riding in a seized police vehicle that had been reconfigured as an army vehicle and were fatally wounded after one of them shot at a police officer who had called upon him to lay down his weapon. Ravi denounced the incident as an assassination and called for retaliation across the country.
The following day, in response, a group of ex-soldiers attacked the police station in Inch, and hundreds of former FADH and their supporters from other anti-Aristide factions paraded in Cap Haitien, demanding 10 years of back pay.
These former soldiers already had begun arrogating police functions inside of Cap Haitien to themselves, including surveillance patrols. In Petite Gouve, rebels took four police officers hostage and seized their weapons, though they were released later that day.
In the face of this wave of new challenges, the government and UN peacekeepers alike appear virtually helpless. Prime Minister Le Tortue and his self-caricaturing government have made bold declarations that peacekeepers will imminently retake control of all government buildings, but the prospect of any such action occurring anytime soon appears to be nothing more than a mixture of bluff and fantasy.
The government has set up a committee to negotiate with the soldiers and offered as initial concessions the integration into the police force of up to 1,000 former soldiers of a force that once numbered over 6,000 in strength. However, Ravi refused to meet with the commission, declaring in Petite Gouve, "The government doesn't need to reconstitute us. We are here. We've always been here."
The only thing the government has to do is pay us the 10 years, 7 months they owe us, and let us do our jobs.
On September 12th, the government did succeed in obtaining the commitment of a group of representatives of former military personnel, of which Ravi was not a member, to a vaguely worded declaration asserting that the manner of the military will be dealt with through dialogue. The authority of the government must be respected, and voluntary and peaceful evacuation of public buildings actually under control of demobilized soldiers must be done within the framework of an agreement between the two parties.
Whether this vague rhetoric will produce any concessions in practice on the part of the ex-soldiers remains to be seen. But subsequent demonstrations in their support in Saint-Marc and Petite Gouve on September 13th and a march of ex-soldiers wearing military uniforms in the capital on September 15th sent a clear signal that the military remnants of the FADH are far from ready to lay down their arms to civil authority.
At the same time that the government has shown itself utterly incapable of, or uninterested in, controlling the rebel bands, the UN Stabilization Mission, or MINUSTAH, has disavowed itself of any responsibility in dealing with the ex-soldiers.
Spokesman Toussaint Kongo-Doudou declared, "We have no comment on the subject because it is a government problem. It is not a problem of the MINUSTAH. This is a Haitian affair."
As astounding as the statement appears, given that among the principal points of MINUSTAH's mandate are the disarmament of armed factions, of which the ex-soldiers are currently the most powerful, and the establishment of a climate of security in advance of national elections on the island is a must, the de facto acknowledgement of a stalemate when it comes to security issues is an all too accurate description of the current limitations of the undersized UN force now in Haiti. To date, only 2,755 of an authorized 6,700 UN troops have arrived in Haiti, making deployments in the north and east of the country impossible, and only a third of the 1,622 civilian police officers authorized have been deployed.
Thus, the UN is unable to maintain a security presence in many of the more remote regions of the countryside, and has yet to launch the disarmament program that is a fundamental prerequisite for the reestablishment of some measure of political stability.
Moreover, the force's Brazilian commanders have openly warned that they do not have enough troops to stop renewed conflict.
Likewise, Argentine Defense Minister José Pampuro highlighted the particularly troubling prospect that renewed skirmishes could have taken place on September 18th, the anniversary of the dissolution of the army by Aristide. While additional troops from Sri Lanka, Nepal, Spain, and Morocco, among others, are expected to bring the total MINUSTAH force to 5,000 members by the end of October, for the moment, the UN peacekeepers have been rendered completely incapable of fulfilling their most basic function, preserving order and a measure of governmental authority.
The sound of silence. Washington, New York turned their eyes away from Port-au-Prince, perhaps the most alarming aspect of the rapidly deteriorating security situation in Haiti, is the extraordinary indifference, aside from some storm-related humanitarian aid in response to the natural catastrophe that just hit Haiti, has been exhibited by the international community in the face of this creeping coup being executed by the former FADH.
The Security Council issued only an anemic statement on September 10th, in which it stressed the urgency of disbanding and disarming all illegal armed groups, but offered not even the whisper of a commitment to ensure that this task is in fact achieved.
The Organization of American States has remained silent, as has the State Department and much of the Caribbean community, which over the past 6 months has taken the most courageous stance on unfolding events in Haiti. CARICOM is now riven by internal divisions over whether to readmit the La Tortue government into CARICOM.
Also strangely absent is the recently appointed UN Special Representative to Haiti, Chilean diplomat Juan Gabriel Valdez, whose selection was widely hailed as evidence of a new Latin American commitment to inter-hemispheric cooperation, who has since all but disappeared from carrying out his admittedly difficult mission.
While his capacity for action may be constrained, Valdez should at the very least be actively attempting to convey to the Security Council, the Bush administration, and leaders of other hemispheric bodies the gravity of the unfolding military takeover in Haiti.
Unfortunately, up to now, Haiti's plight has been overshadowed by the persistent bloodshed in Darfur, Iraq, and Afghanistan, or has been patronizingly dismissed as yet another round of violence in a perennially unstable country.
Haiti has reached a point of crisis, and decisive intervention is required if any shred of, or hope for, Haitian democracy is to be preserved.
However shorthanded and overburdened its staff may be, the task of convincing the international community of the necessity of such intervention falls first to the UN Stabilization Mission and to Valdez.
Hopefully, in the coming months, they will decisively demonstrate their commitment to ensuring that Haiti is not being abandoned by the international community yet again, or that leading UN authorities, including Valdez, will at least have the dignity of resigning from their assignment in protest of the cruel hoax now being unleashed on the island and its population.
On October 13, 2004, Haitian police forcibly entered the Saint-Clair Catholic Church in Port-au-Prince and arrested the pastor, Reverend Gérard Jean-Just, without a warrant while he was feeding the hungry children of his parish.
Father Jean-Just is a prominent activist for peace, justice, and the rights of immigrants in Haiti and the U.S. There are also reports of arrests of two other priests, Reverend Françoise and Reverend Savager, as well as raids on three additional churches.
The Saint-Clair Church is located in Petite Place Cazot, a poor neighborhood in Delma, a Port-au-Prince suburb. On Wednesdays, Father Jean-Just runs a soup kitchen that gives many area residents, especially children, their only meal of the day.
During the feeding program, heavily armed men surrounded the church and announced their intention to arrest Father Jean-Just. Some wore uniforms of the Haitian National Police, HNP, some wore no uniforms, and many wore masks.
The police refused to produce a warrant, and when asked what the charge was, replied that the priest was a threat to public order. Later, interim Prime Minister Gerard Letourtout told journalists there was a warrant, but could not say what the charge was. When Father Jean-Just refused to leave his feeding program, the police raided the church and dragged him out of the rectory.
Witnesses reported that the police punched the priest, and Father Jean-Just reported an injury to his foot. He was transported to a police station holding cell, where he is now being held incommunicado.
Interim Prime Minister Letourtout claimed he had intelligence that Father Jean-Just associated with people who were planning to commit violence against the government later this week, and the Saint-Clair raid was a preemptive strike.
The illegal arrest continues a month-long wave of systematic attacks against civil society institutions, including labor unions, radio stations, lawyers, and members of parliament, as well as lethal police raids in poor neighborhoods. It is particularly troubling that the persecution extended to Father Jean Just, one of Haiti's most persistent and influential voices for peace over the last two decades.
The arrest shows a brazenness and disregard of Haitian and international law not seen since the Duvalier dictatorships.
Father Jean Just speaks out forcefully against all forms of violence, from the pulpit and on his radio shows. He spoke out against the state-sponsored violence of the Duvalier regime, the de facto dictatorship, 1991 to 1994, and the Haitian army.
He also speaks out against violence by the victims of that violence and by supporters of Haiti's constitutional government. When opposition politicians were attacked following the April 2000 funeral of assassinated journalist Jean Dominique, Father Jean Just spent his entire two-hour radio show imploring everyone to return to their homes.
Father Jean Just has been highly effective at fighting political and economic violence through peaceful means. When he was forced into exile for criticizing the Duvalier dictatorship, Father Jean Just retaliated with a lawsuit, winning a judgment against Jean-Claude Duvalier in Miami federal court.
In 1979, he co-founded the Haitian Refugee Center in Florida, which provided assistance to thousands of refugees from the Duvalier regime, and fought unjust immigration policies all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
In Haiti, Father Jean Just encouraged victims of the de facto dictatorship to organize and to force Haitian courts to deliver justice.
On August 16, 2004, Haiti's interim government held a retrial in the case of slain pro-democracy activist Antoine Ismerie.
Although he knew the prosecution was not serious, the New York Times called it sham justice in Haiti and feared arrest. Father Jean Just bravely appeared, the only summoned witness to do so.
On September 7, 2004, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights issued a statement expressing concern over several key areas in which the basic rights and freedoms of Haitians remain weak and imperiled.
On September 16, 2004, Interim Prime Minister Gerard Latortue lashed out at his critics during an interview on Radio Caribas, complaining that human rights criticism was making his relations with donor countries difficult. Later that day, police officers raided the offices of the Confederation of Haitian Workers Labor Union and arrested nine union members, all without a warrant. The official justification for the arrest was that the defendants were close to the Lavalis authorities.
All are still in custody as of October 13, 2004. Hours later, masked men in military attire attacked the office of the Committee for the Protection of the Rights of the Haitian People.
On October 2nd, the police raided a radio station and arrested two senators and a former deputy from the FANMI Lavalis party who had criticized the interim government during a radio program.
As with today's raid on St. Clair's church and the arrests at the Confederation of Haitian Workers Union, the radio station arrests were done without a warrant and justified outside of the judicial process with vague statements about connections to violence.
When a lawyer, also a former deputy, came to represent the arrested, he was arrested too. The lawyer and one of the senators was released on October 5th. The other two legislators remained in jail as of October 13th.
Father Jean Just, the nine union members and two legislators, joined many pro-democracy activists and officials of Haiti's constitutional government in jail, including former Prime Minister Yvan Neptune, former Minister of the Interior Jean-Guilherme Privert, and former delegate Jacques Mathalier.
All are held illegally. Neither Prime Minister Neptune nor Minister Privert have ever been brought before the judge who issued their arrest warrant. Mr. Mathalier was brought before a judge who ordered his liberation on July 12th, but prison authorities transferred Mathalier out of that judge's jurisdiction, where he remains 3 months later.
On September 30th, police interrupted a legal demonstration commemorating the anniversary of Haiti's September 30th, 1991 coup d'etat.
Human rights observers accompanying the demonstration reported that police fired on the march. After several attempts to disperse, it failed.
On the morning of October 1st, Interim Prime Minister Latortue conceded in a radio interview that the police had shot at protesters and individuals had been killed, and indicated that the authorities would take action against future protests.
Latortue's announcement was followed by 2 weeks of police raids in poor neighborhoods, considered to be bastions of support for Haiti's constitutional government.
One raid on Wednesday, October 6th, a purported arms search in the poor neighborhood of Bel Air yielded 75 illegal arrests, but not a single weapon.
Although it is difficult to confirm the deaths, at least 24 people have been killed by police and their paramilitary aides so far in October.
the United Nations troops in Haiti have not intervened to restrain illegal police behavior. UN troops guarded the perimeter of the radio station during the October 2nd arrest.
According to a BBC translation of an interview broadcast on October 8th on Haiti's Radio Metropole, the UN Commander General Augusto Heleno Ribeiro Pereira, in discussing police raids in poor neighborhoods, declared that, "We must kill the bandits, but it will have to be the bandits only, not everybody."
The U.S. government has not intervened to restrain the interim government's persecution of civil society, despite having both the ability and the responsibility to do so.
The U.S. played a leading role in installing interim Prime Minister Latour II after forcing out Haiti's elected president in February. The U.S. is currently Haiti's largest donor and international patron.
The U.S. has not made a single public statement urging the interim government to respect the Constitution or refrain from persecution throughout the month-long wave of attacks on civil society.
To the contrary, the U.S. has provided diplomatic cover to the repression with completely unsubstantiated statements that the violence is being directed by Haiti's constitutional president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, now in exile in South Africa.
Bishop Thomas Gumbleton, auxiliary bishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Detroit, has made public a letter regarding the critical human rights situation in Haiti, which reads as follows.
In addition to the death and destruction caused by the recent hurricane and floods, there is another disaster going on in Haiti right now. It is a human rights disaster.
We just returned from Haiti with a human rights delegation for Pax Christi USA, the Catholic Peace Movement. Our media has made us aware of the human toll from the flooding. What we are not so aware of is that there has been a coup in Haiti that continues to take a substantial human toll as well.
The forced exile of President Aristide earlier this year was effectively a coup that eliminated the constitutionally elected government of the people of Haiti. The elected government was replaced with an illegally appointed government of the minority, with economic and military power, supported by the U.S., France, and Canada.
As a result, human rights conditions are now worse in Haiti now than they have been in years.
The democratically elected government leaders and their supporters are in prison or have been made into refugees in their own country, while former military, gangs, and rebels affiliated with those in power are often allowed to do just as they please.
We visited with several political prisoners in the national penitentiary, including the highest officials of the government of President Aristide, Prime Minister Yvon Neptune, Minister of the Interior Jacques-Alain Privert, and the former mayor of Port-au-Prince. The rule of law is being blatantly disregarded in their cases.
For example, Minister Privert has been held in the prison for 6 months and has yet to see a judge for formal charges, which by law should happen within 48 hours of arrest.
Prime Minister Neptune, who was arrested days after giving an interview critical of the government, has been in prison since June 2004.
An elected delegate of parliament, Jacques Mathalier, was reportedly arrested for arson, but after going before a judge, he was ordered to be released on July 12th. Instead, the Ministry of Justice ordered him transferred to the National Penitentiary, where he has remained in prison ever since.
The former mayor of Port-au-Prince was detained by the U.S. military for 20 days in a boat offshore while the new powers established themselves. Then he was transferred to the National Penitentiary, where he remains.
We also visited the women's prison in Petionville, where 51 women are kept in a poorly lit concrete structure, and met with activist Annette Auguste. We also visited the women's prison in Petionville, where 51 women are kept in a poorly lit concrete structure, and met with activist Annette Auguste, a 69-year-old folk singer also called Soanne, who supported President Aristide. She has been in prison since May 10, 2004.
Ms. Auguste and all of her family of 15, including children as young as 12, 10, and 5 years old, were illegally arrested in her home by U.S. Marines.
The Marines used grenades to break into the house in the middle of the night, forced black hoods onto the heads of all inside, and bound their arms behind their backs with plastic handcuffs.
While she was arrested and questioned by the U.S., she is now being held by the Haitian government and has never confronted her accusers. She told us, "The Americans put me here, and I am waiting for the Americans to set me free."
It is not just political opponents who are the victims of human rights violations.
Our delegation also visited a local police station in Port-au-Prince where 36 males were being kept in one concrete cell, 12 foot by 12 foot. None of those in the cell had formal charges. None had a lawyer. None had seen a judge. One had been in the cell since September 4th. There is no medical care and no food is provided. What food there is must be brought by families.
Mixed in the same small cell were children, adults, and people with mental problems and epilepsy. We met one 13-year-old boy and two 15-year-olds in the cell. Prisoners showed us open sores on their legs. Others showed injuries from physical brutality.
Some told us no one in their family even knows they are in jail. They sleep standing up and leaning against the wall, as there is not enough space for everyone to even sit down together, much less lay down. The criminal law system, which has never worked well for the poor, is now being used for massive arrests in the poorest neighborhoods.
We are very concerned about the widespread reemergence of the previously dissolved military, which has historically been a challenge to and oppressive to an independent civil society. The military has also often served as an avenue through which the U.S. has exerted power over Haiti.
We also met with many poor people in Port-au-Prince, including some who were forced out of the communities outside of Port-au-Prince, communities like Petite Gave and from the Central Plateau, as a result of the coup, because they were perceived as supporters of President Aristide, the Fanmi Levalis party, or protectors of human rights.
Opponents of the elected government came to town and killed the chief of police, burned down the police station and the prison. They then sought out supporters of the elected government, ransacked and burned their houses, placed black bags on their heads, executed them, and dumped them in the river.
Many from outlying towns have fled to Port-au-Prince, others to the Dominican Republic. Another young man told us how he was beaten and threatened with execution for starting a school. He fled to Port-au-Prince, where he now stays in one room with 15 others.
A woman and her family were attacked and had to flee because they were thought to have spoken to human rights visitors and foreign journalists and voiced criticism of the government. They have been sleeping on the roof of a friend's house.
They showed us pictures of their burned homes, which were ransacked and destroyed by former militaries and opposition gangs. One person who went back just the week before to take photos of the damaged homes was murdered for doing that.
People have lost businesses and property. They are now homeless and living in fear, and hiding with anyone who will shelter them. They are refugees in their own country. There are hundreds more from their area in the same situation, and thousands more from other small outlying communities.
Journalists, human rights workers, teachers, church workers, and labor unions are being threatened regularly and are clearly at risk.
National elected independent union leaders reported that the situation of workers has always been difficult with the bosses as adversaries, but now is worse because the government is aligned with the bosses and is also an adversary.
Workers and businesses affiliated with the new powers in government are intimidated and forced to appear to be supportive of the new government in order to keep their jobs. The situation for workers is much, much worse since the exile of President Aristide.
Within days of our visit, police with black masks attacked the office of a large labor organization and arrested 9 people who are being held without charges.
We visited a cooperative community school in Pétionville called Sopudep, which educates about 700 mostly poor children. Because the school was started by the community during the time of President Aristide, those now in power are threatening to revoke its lease. In early September of 2004, the newly appointed mayor of the town showed up at the school with armed guards. Only after a demonstration by community people and pressure by a U.S. senator has the pressure against the school been scaled back.
Our delegation strongly concluded that the rule of law is being disregarded in the exile. Arrest, beatings, executions, and detention of the people who were democratically chosen by the people of Haiti to govern.
People affiliated with the elected government and those concerned about human rights have been beaten and arrested and homes burned and run off to live in hiding. The Haitian Constitution and international law are being openly violated. We agree with the people that the rule of law must be reinstated.
The international community must help restore the elected representatives of the people. This means explicitly the return of President Aristide and the release of all political prisoners.
Human rights in Haiti need immediate international attention. Current people in power have said publicly that local human rights organizations are stirring up trouble, a threatening warning to stop human rights investigations.
International human rights groups must step up monitoring human rights and protect those on the ground who are trying to do so.
We challenge the role of the international community, particularly the U.S., in Haiti. It does not appear that the primary concern of U.S. policy in Haiti has been democracy, human rights, or fairness to the poor and powerless. It should be, and all Americans should insist that our policy help protect democracy, the rule of law, human rights, and the protection of the poor.
We believe that if all the people of the world saw what we saw, they would insist that justice be done for Haiti. We ask the world to look at the people of Haiti as our sisters and brothers. Recognizing that our sisters and brothers are in serious trouble, we must all work together to help them bring justice to their country.
The Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network issued an urgent alert October 7, 2004. It contained a series of demands addressed to the international community and, in particular, to the U.S. government. These demands closely follow the claims to Haitian social organizations.
The return of constitutional rule to Haiti by restoring all elected officials of all parties to their offices throughout the country until the end of their mandates and another election is held, as mandated by Haiti's constitution.
Condemn the killings, illegal imprisonment, and confiscation of the property of supporters of Haiti's constitutional government, and insist that Haiti's illegitimate interim government immediately cease its own persecution and put a stop to persecution by the thugs and murderers from the paramilitary gangs.
Insist on the immediate release of all political prisoners in Haitian jails, including Prime Minister Yvonne Neptune, other constitutional government officials, and folk singer activist Soanne.
Insist on the disarmament of the thugs, death squad leaders, and convicted human rights violators, and their prosecution for all crimes committed during the attack on Haiti's elected government, and help rebuild Haiti's police force, ensuring that it excludes anyone who helped to overthrow the democratically elected government or who participated in other human rights violations.
Stop the indefinite detention and automatic repatriation of Haitian refugees and immediately grant temporary protected status to all Haitian refugees presently in the United States until democracy is restored to Haiti. And
support the cause by the OAS, CARICOM, and the Africa Union for an investigation into the circumstances of President Aristide's removal. And enact Congresswoman Barbara Lee's Truth Act, H.R. 3919, which calls for the investigation of the forcible removal of the democratically elected president of Haiti.
This information has been provided by the Council on Hemispheric Affairs from its analysis, Haiti, Smoldering on the Edge of Chaos, produced by Jessica Light, COHA Research Fellow, the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, Bishop Thomas Gummelton, Auxiliary Bishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Detroit, and Bill Quigley, Law Professor at Loyola University New Orleans School of Law, and the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network.
It has been produced with the collaboration of the Orville H. Schell Jr. Center for International Human Rights at Yale Law School, and edited and post-produced at our studios in Madrid on October 21, 2004.
You've been listening to Radio News Corps.